you know, I think wherever you are, whatever you do in your life, that if you're lucky enough to be as passionate and energized about what you do in your 50s as you were in your 20s, you're doing all right, really.
Hello, and welcome to the Listening Party Revelations podcast. I'm Suze.
And I'm Trudy. This is a podcast centered around the social media phenomenon known as Tim's Twitter Listening Party.
Each week, we invite guests to share their experiences of attending or hosting listening parties. This week, we welcome a legend to LPR Pod, best known for his years as resident DJ at Manchester's Hacienda Club, journalist, and now an author of several books, as well as an enthusiastic supporter and participant of Tim's Twitter listening parties. A big welcome to Mr. Dave Heslam.
Thank you for having me.
Hello, Dave.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
You are predominantly known as a DJ. Can you explain how you got into DJing and did you have an alternative career plan?
Well, I kind of fell into DJing a little bit accidentally. I'm talking probably 38 years ago or something.
Wow.
Okay.
I was involved in putting on bands.
Right.
Small bands in a small venue called The Man Alive. And we needed someone to play the music before the bands played and then afterwards. And I just kind of volunteered to do the work.
Oh.
And then one time the band cancelled, so I had to play the whole evening.
Wow.
Yeah.
And my colleague said, oh, that was okay. That was decent. Why don't once a month you do it and then we don't have to pay a band? So I did. I didn't really have an alternative career. I didn't even think of that as a career. That it just kind of grew from that.
Did you bring along your own records?
Yeah. I'd had just about enough vinyl. I used to borrow records off friends at that point. There weren't many DJs with careers, really. I mean, there were radio DJs, but the whole club thing all started at the end of the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when I got my first proper jobs, which were 85, 86, I was writing a fanzine.
Right.
And I was also writing in the NME.
Yeah.
So I had my DJ writing double-headed life even way back then.
Wow.
Yeah. Have you ever considered joining a band? I don't know if you play any instruments or sing.
I was very briefly in a band when I was at school, which was called, we started by being called Emil and the Detectives, which was a children's book.
Oh, right.
But then we just became the Detectives, but we disappeared without trace. Well, do you think that DJing is like a poor substitute for being in a band?
Not at all. No, not at all.
You think DJ is a kind of failed musician?
No.
The number of musicians who now do DJ sets kind of slightly annoys me. Like it's,
I'm sure, yeah. You know,
like it's a part-time
they just kind of rock up. I remember having an argument with Guy Garvey. He did a DJ set at Hard Rock Cafe.
Okay.
And I'm like, I wouldn't presume to go on stage somewhere and be a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
So the DJ trade union had a word with him, I think.
That's good. Well, there's proper DJing and there's playing records, isn't there? Or music playing tracks.
Thank you. Correct.
Yes.
I can appreciate the difference.
Yeah, we like people to appreciate the difference. Thank you.
Yes. Do you get much time to listen to music for pleasure? Or is that like work for you?
I don't think it really DJing as work. For me, it's a massive pleasure, you know?
Yeah.
Karl Marx said that the mark of a truly mature society is where there's no division between labour and your time off, your pleasure. Two things need to be combined. So I kind of feel like although the rest of the world maybe do not enjoy their work, I really do.
Yeah, so that's good.
Yeah.
And so all listening to music is pleasure for me.
Wonderful.
Yeah, you're very lucky if you can combine your passion with work. Not that many people can do that, I don't think.
No, so if I spend all day listening to music on YouTube and Spotify and elsewhere, I can justify it by saying it's work.
Yes.
It's research.
Yes,
research.
Exactly, yes. Tell us a little bit about your DJing at the Hacienda and around the world. You've travelled quite a lot with your DJing.
Wow, okay, a little bit about that.
Well, just a little bit.
As much as you care to.
I mean, when I did little one-offs at the Hacienda and then I became a resident in 1986.
Yeah.
And so 87, 88, I was doing two nights a week, Thursday and Saturday.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was just at the time that the whole scene around the Hacienda and the arrival of techno and ecstasy and dance music and acid house and Manchester, all that took off at the same time.
Incredible.
So it was just fantastic to be a participant in that explosion and watching week on and week you know, each week seeing people getting interested in different kinds of music and the fashion changing. And it was just incredibly exciting time.
Yeah,
and sure. The one thing was I was very eclectic as a DJ back then.
Okay.
And I kind of still am, really. So when I go off DJing in Italy or Paris or wherever, I like to play in an eclectic style like I did back then.
Okay.
Yeah.
But no, it's brilliant to travel DJing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who wouldn't want to do something like that?
Yes, exactly.
You know, when you arrive somewhere and you're immediately, you know, you're introduced to people who are on your wavelength, and everyone becomes best mates for the night, and you know, and then they invite you back. This is brilliant. I love it.
Have you had any DJing disasters or mishaps over the years you can tell us about?
Lots of them. I went all the way to Swansea. It's not that far, but seemed like it. All the way to Swansea and five people came.
Oh no.
Quite hard to get a great vibe with five people. I mean, I knew them all by name by the end of the night.
Oh, wow.
That was a bit. And then there was another time when there was about 1,000 people in a room.
Yeah.
And the DJ deck started jumping up and down.
Wow.
And you know what an audience is like when that happened? Instead of them having any sympathy for me, they kind of booed. And I just left. It wasn't my fault. It was just all set up wrong, you know.
Yeah.
So stuff happens, you know, but you kind of learn how to deal with it. I mean, at the Hacienda, you know, you were constantly put into a situation that you had no training for.
Yes.
You know, I mean, occasionally there would be like a massive fight. I remember one time I'd put a record on, and next thing I knew, the whole dance floor had cleared.
Oh.
And the doormen were chasing some kind of gangster mob with baseball bats around the dance floor.
Wow.
And so the atmosphere obviously deteriorated very quickly.
Yeah.
And then the fight, obviously, eventually they got the gangsters out of the back fire exit or something.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, what do I do now? What do I play next? So you had to kind of, you had to be on your toes, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sure different types of music would change the atmosphere quite a bit if you put the wrong.
Yeah, thing. I mean, when you're DJing, you're aware of the changing atmosphere, and you know, obviously, your aim is to make that atmosphere as positive and celebratory as you can.
Yeah.
But you know, obviously, when doormen and gangsters are fighting, that's quite difficult.
Yes.
That's quite terrifying, I imagine.
I've been terrified a few times DJing. I mean, seriously, I mean, there have been times when I've got home or I've got back to a hotel.
Yeah.
And if I'd been religious, I probably would have got down on my knees and thanked God that I'd got out of there.
Wow.
But having said that, you know, my view is 99.9% of the people who've been in any of the clubs I've DJed in.
Yeah.
Have been, you know, beautiful people who I'd be happy to, you know, hang out with.
Oh, that's good.
And my DJing is for them, you know, it's not for the wreckers, you know.
Yes.
But yeah, I've had some pretty scary moments. I had a gun pulled on me one time.
Wow.
I had my front teeth punched out.
Oh goodness.
I had a cigarette stubbed out on my forehead.
Oh. Wow.
You know, this is what happens. You're out there, the general public, and the general public can get a bit out of control, I guess.
Yeah, night after night.
I hope none of that was directly related to what you were playing at the time.
No, I don't think it was a judgment on my music policy.
No. We're very grateful and glad you're still here with us.
Yeah, thank you.
You are originally from Birmingham and moved to Manchester. What is your favourite thing about the city, and do you have a favourite place in Manchester?
How long is it now? 41 years I've been here.
Wow.
My favourite, I don't know what my favourite thing or my favourite place is, really. I mean, I know my least favourite thing is Manchester Airport, which is the worst airport in the world. I always want to get home and feel really excited, but I get home and, you know, they don't have any stairs to take to the aeroplane, so you can't get off it and you're stuck there, you know. And then, anyway, it's just one of my bugbears, so that's not my favorite place. Ultimately, these places are about people, aren't they? You know,
as I said earlier
about me traveling the world DJing, everywhere makes a very great impact on me because I'm meeting like-minded people, you know, and I'm hanging with them. So I often arrive back from DJing, think, oh, I could move there. you know, which is a bit of an illusion, but it's a bit the same as Manchester. You know, the people I hang out with, obviously, I love them all to death. So my favourite place is kind of in amongst my mates, really.
Okay.
Good answer.
Thank you.
You've contributed to 3 listening parties for Joy Division albums and 3 for New Order, and joined in quite a few others, such as The Fall, Orange Juice and Jane Weaver. How do you prepare your tweets for these?
Well, thanks for tracking my progress.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, what I tend to do is I kind of have a little moment to, when I know they're coming up, I spend a little bit of time thinking about those bands. I mean, Joy Division, New Order, The Smiths, The Fall, you know, they're bands that I've seen play. I mean, I'm very lucky to see Joy Division 3 times, New Order countless times. So I kind of think back sometimes to what they were like when they played live.
Okay.
So there's a lot of stuff in my brain about all these things, you know, because I've been listening to them and in many cases writing about them all their careers. So I kind of feel like I know a lot that isn't on their Wikipedia entry, you know.
Oh, okay.
So with Joy Division, obviously, there's a lot you can read about them, but, you know, I feel like being able to write about what it was genuinely like the first time they played Love Will Tear Us Apart in Manchester at Manchester Apollo, what was that like?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
When the Still album was the listening party album.
Yes.
Yeah.
Division's album. Half the album is live from the University of Birmingham, their final ever gig.
Yeah.
And I was there. So I thought it's not very often that you have a listening party with a live album
where
a member of the audience, which was a small audience, you know, there are only about 300 of us, a member of the audience were there and, you know, remembering what it was like on stage. And and I also know through my work, you know, connections, say, with Primal Scream, when the Screamadelica was the listening party album.
I
remember the Screamadelica tour coming to the Hacienda, and I helped organize it, and I found in my work diaries all the notes that I took about
how
we were playing Primal Scream and Andy Weatherall and everybody else on that tour.
Yes.
So I thought, well, this isn't the kind of stuff that Primal Scream aren't going to know that stuff.
No, okay, that's right. Yeah.
Not in Wikipedia. So I try and prepare tweets that a little bit, you know, nobody else would know, or nobody else bothered knowing, or whatever. From a, you know, like Robert Forster, when Danger in the Past was, if you remember with Danger in the Past, Pete Pafaides was vocalizing for Robert.
Yes.
Because Robert Forster, who made the album, he's not very internet savvy.
No.
So I think, so Pete kind of hosted it. But you know, Robert's a good friend of mine. And I just kind of happened to know that the album cover was modeled on an old photograph of James Joyce.
Okay.
You know, which is kind of a bit of a mad little thing. So it's just nice to be able to post and share with people the picture of the front cover of the album, and also the photograph that it was modeled on. So, you know, I like preparing, but also I like just kind of following what everybody else is saying, you know.
Yeah.
The best listening parties are always the ones where you find new information and revelations.
That was partly the inspiration for our podcast, Revelations.
I spent like 2 hours when I knew The Queen Is Dead was going to be the album.
Yes.
I spent about that song, Never Had No One Ever. And, you know, I at that point, I was reviewing albums. I didn't actually review that for the NME, but I did review one of the Smiths albums for the NME.
Okay,
so back then, obviously, as a reviewer, you listen to it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, there's lots of stuff about The Queen Is Dead that I, you know, I recall when it came out. And it's always nice to look back on those things.
Yeah.
And so I kind of really dug deeply into my memory. And I remembered those lines in the song, I had a bad dream. It lasted 20 years, 7 months and 27 days. I think that's the lyric.
Okay.
So I worked out, I assumed that that was the first 20 years, 7 months and 27 days of Morrissey's life. I worked out the date that it refers to.
Oh, okay.
I found an old newspaper online.
Yeah.
Knowing that Morrissey is a Pisces, I then shared his horoscope for the day on the song when he was 20 years, 7 months and 27 days.
Wow,
that's brilliant.
And I thought, I don't know if this is revealing or very, very unnecessary.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't think anyone else would come up with that.
Oh, no. Definitely
no,
not.
No, definitely.
Why would
Exactly.
His horoscope was something like, a proposal of marriage is just around the corner. How useful these things are.
What did you learn from joining in those listening parties, if anything?
Oh, well, I think from those and others, I don't know if I learned it or it was just confirmed to me how music brings people together.
Yes. You know,
it's an incredible social glue.
Yeah.
And the idea of people around the world experiencing the music together.
Yeah.
And, you know, reading or sharing their thoughts about the album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just connected us.
Yes.
So I think what I learned was, you know, not to undervalue music as a social glue and as a way of connecting people, you know, and that was quite important, I think. Very important.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. The new thing is that we've discovered you don't have to be in the same room to enjoy the social glue. You do it over Twitter.
You don't have to, you know, and also some of the barriers that you might have, that people might have in terms of, for example, people who, not even in lockdown, but generally people who maybe have anxiety about going out. They live in a part of the world, you know, that obviously Manchester's wonderful, you have lots of opportunities to go out, but there's, you know, people in other parts of the world who may be feeling geographically or psychologically isolated.
Yes.
So the idea of the listening party obviously is fantastic for people in those situations.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
What's the most surprising revelation you've either shared or discovered during a listening party?
Morrissey's horoscope, I think, probably.
I'm going to have to go back and see this again.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of constantly surprised by them. I liked the Dex's Midnight Runners listening party.
Yeah.
Because in real, almost as the album was playing, Kevin Rowland, the singer from the band, you could tell that his reaction to the music was very genuine and spontaneous.
Yes.
Other members of the band joined in, and there seemed to be almost a reconnection with them all in terms of the band.
Yeah, that's pretty wonderful.
And I thought that was that was a fantastic revelation, probably more for them even than for, you know?
Yeah. But time after time, the artists say they don't go back and listen to their music. They wouldn't have any reason to, particularly, and the listening parties caused that, given them a reason to do that as a full album.
Absolutely.
There are lots of listening parties now for new artists and bands. Have you made any new discoveries from attending Tim's listening parties? And if not, where do you find your new music?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because although there is a lot of new music, and I like to, you know, get involved with the listening parties, or, you know, at least listen to the albums that are being featured when it's new music.
Yeah.
But I also think that in our era, a lot of new music to us is actually old music, in the sense that I'm even someone like me who's listened to music constantly for 5 decades, I still discover stuff that I missed the first time around.
And I
think sometimes our definition of new music doesn't really necessarily only mean brand new music coming out now. Sometimes it's like you can discover almost like a whole new genre of music sometimes.
Yes,
because, you know, all this music is available and accessible on the internet in a way that previously, you know, to go and find out about old music, you'd have to be close to a record shop, or you'd have to hope a radio DJ would play it.
Yeah.
So I've discovered music that's new to me.
Yeah.
But and I think there's a few. I mean, for example, Public Service Broadcasting.
Yeah.
I'd seen them live, but I'd never really listened to the album.
Ah,
right.
So getting a chance to learn more about their album. Every Valley. That was really good. I enjoyed that.
A lot of stories behind the songs as well.
Yeah.
Have you been to any recent gigs by artists or bands featured at the parties?
Have I even been out?
Well, that's we've met you. We've seen proof.
I don't know if I've really been to. I haven't been to that many. I don't think I've been to that many gigs since the very beginning of lockdown. I'm trying to think of some that I might have been to. So the answer is probably no. But funnily enough, talking about Public Service Broadcasting, I was listening to their new album this morning.
Okay.
And I was desperately trying to find out when they might tour. And so actually, I feel like there's a lot of listening party acts who I would now like to see live. And I just, when will I get the chance, you know?
Yeah.
But there are bands who are touring in February and March next year.
Yeah.
They may not even get to tour because of COVID restrictions. So.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more a case of, are you planning to go to any gigs?
Yes. Well, a lot of the gigs that have been on were Were the rescheduled ones already?
Yeah.
They're on now, yeah. Yeah,
and the answer is yes. I'm kind of, there's a bigger list of bands that I want to go and see live now as a result of the listening party.
Yes, I think that's the same for all of us. We've got a list of albums to buy and bands to see.
Yes, longer by the day.
Yeah, longer by the day. What's the most memorable listening party you've attended and why?
It was quite memorable, that one. I can't remember which Joy Division album it was, but it was when Stephen Morris was joining in. And obviously, Hookie had started out being the only member of the band involved. And then at the end, Hookie couldn't stop himself from tweeting to Stephen, you know, we're being very positive and friendly now, but don't forget we haven't spoken for 15 years. That was a bit memorable, but I didn't really want all that to be out in the public domain. But anyway, there we go. I think the Lone Lady album, Nerve Up,
yes,
which I think is kind of 10 years old. And I put a gig on by Lone Lady 10 years ago.
Wow, okay.
And so I'd lived with that album, you know, and enjoyed her work.
Yes. Yeah.
10 years.
Yeah.
So it was one of them where I thought I knew everything there was to know about her and her work.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was so good, I think. I mean, if you remember, she shared photographs of and I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not saying she overthinks everything, but she had a very clear idea of what the album was trying to do. And
yes, yeah.
I loved it. And then I was really pleased that second album and then her new album were also featured.
Yeah.
Similarly, she was fantastic. Got involved.
Definitely one of our new finds. We didn't know about her 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of our guests have mentioned that her listening parties were some of the best because of the mixture of photos and the whole thing. It wasn't just explaining how she made it. It was the whole background.
And I think, you know, she doesn't have the profile that, you know, other artists have. And so I think there was what she was saying and what she was sharing with us was all new, you know.
Yes.
I mean, that obviously made it a lot more memorable. Yeah.
Who would be your dream listening party guests, either living or dead?
Well, let's say dead.
Yes, okay.
My ideal listening party guest would be dead, and it would be a very quiet listening party.
We're bringing them back for a special one night only.
Oh, we'll bring them back.
Yeah.
Okay,
bring them back to life. Yeah.
What about Jim Morrison?
Okay, yes. Yeah. We'll have him.
Yep.
Maybe he'd be living in Paris.
Okay. Yes.
And obviously, he was a very... I mean, he'd be a bit off his head, which would make it quite...
Well, yes, the question of how much, isn't it? can he type on a keyboard?
Oh, good question.
Well, he could dictate to someone else anyway. So.
Can he tweet? Yeah.
His tweet. But then, you know, I mean, he was obviously, as a guy, he was very into, you know, poetry and books.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would be interested in what his influences were, you know, and I've seen a few documentaries with other members of the Doors talking about the making of various albums.
Yeah.
And obviously his input is never there, you know. So, I mean, I'm not like a massive fan of his, but I think that would be really intriguing.
Yeah.
Yes. Definitely, yeah. Wow. Okay, so the Doors listening party.
Yeah, I'd make it happen.
Yeah.
We'll put it out there.
Someone to channel Jim as if he was there.
There's lots of young men who channel Jim, isn't there?
Of course.
You know, they wear leather trousers and drink a lot of whiskey and think that makes
sense. So,
there's lots of wannabes out there, I think.
Yeah.
An interesting question. How do you see the listening party concept evolving?
Wow. Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, there's listening party live.
Yes. Yes. We've enjoyed a few of those.
You know, I do think that probably the thing that I would like to be maintained is what you were talking about earlier about the new acts. I think I think giving a platform for young bands with, you know, new albums.
Yeah.
Might have a lot of obstacles to getting across to an audience what they do. I think the listening parties in some ways is very valuable for them.
Yes.
In terms of what happens in the future, I would love that young bands get a chance to talk about what they do.
The best thing is that we get to hear the whole album, not just a song.
Yeah, I mean, I think that
right.
I mentioned Guy Garvey earlier, but I remember interviewing him probably 12 or 13 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, we would talk about all kinds of things. But one of the things we talked about was how the way that people consumed albums was very different to how they had done, and how he in particular wanted people to, you know, he thought that the Elbow albums were, you know, a work that was structured in a particular way to be listened to.
Yeah.
In a particular order, and that all the songs mattered. And I mean, he wasn't kind of, you know, he wasn't whinging too much about it, but he was just saying that as an artist, it was frustrating that people would maybe just download a couple of songs off the album.
Yes,
and never.
That's right. Yeah.
That's
the problem. Once people have the option to buy one track.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you please sum up Tim's Twitter listening party in 3 words for us?
I wonder what the best answer is that you've had on that. Always find it. I guess going back to what I was saying about the listening part is connecting us. Music unites us.
Okay.
Yes.
Two words.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yep. Moving away from the listening parties, back to you. What are you most proud of about your time in the music industry, and would you change anything you've done or not done?
If I'm honest, I'm always really looking on to whatever the next projects will be.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm allowed to plug my current writing project,
cool. Go ahead.
These small format books, which are a kind of a series, and they're not all on music, but a lot of them have a music connection.
Yeah.
And there's, for example, one about Courtney Love, who lived in Liverpool in 1982 for a while and found her experience to be very inspiring, and talks about the music in Liverpool of that time and the people she met, other people she met, as being very important in her decision to return to America and really aim for a career in music. And so, you know, some of my work in the music industry is also, I kind of think of my writing as part of that, you know?
Yeah.
So I always like to think that there's still good things that I can do. So I try not to kind of look back too much. I mean, if I do look back, I look back to me when I was maybe 23, 24, you know, which is many years ago now. And I look through my work diaries, which I have work diaries kept for every year. And I'm just amazed at how much energy and passion I had for what I did.
Yes.
And I'm most proud that at 23 or 24, not only did I have energy and passion, but I was doing stuff. And I don't think I had an awareness at the time that what I was doing was particularly noteworthy. But looking back now, I'm like, wow, you know, you were, you know, in 1986, you were 24 and you put on, you know, Primal Scream's first gig in Manchester.
Yes, amazing stuff.
Lord of the AME. And you DJed at the Hacienda. And I'm like, you know, I want to go back in time and pat myself on the back, really.
Yes, you should, yeah.
But I guess ultimately I'm proud that I still have that passion for what I do. All a decade since.
Because nobody has a sense of longevity. You can't predict the future back then.
I mean, I always think that because sometimes, you know, I think about how much more famous the Hacienda is now than it was in, say, 1987. Or 88. I'm kind of thinking, if we'd worried too much about trying to play stuff that would make us have any historic significance,
how
would we play? You know, you can't turn up on a Saturday night and say, whatever I'm playing now has to, you know, knock the world
on the best on album.
Action. To be remembered for 35, 40 years.
No.
Go and do a great part.
Yes.
So, yeah, longevity isn't something you expect or really even need to be thinking about. But, still, like I say, that, you know, I think whatever you do in your life, that if you're lucky enough to be as passionate and energized about what you do in your 50s as you were in your 20s, you're doing all right, really.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing that you kept the diaries then, to look back on. But I admire anyone who keeps diaries of things. I can't keep up with records.
Diaries were just because there was no other way of writing stuff down. You know, I think probably the diaries for the last 10 years probably aren't really that interesting because it's all on email or spreadsheet.
Yeah.
But my work diaries, they're not the kind of diaries where, you know, like I got up and missed the bus. They're not those sort of diaries. They're this kind of pop will eat itself, £20 guarantee.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like gigs I was putting on, little notes to myself what I'd.
Yeah.
It was just work to you, but now for us looking back, it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
I I look back at them and yeah, they're just kind of scribbles, you know. Okay, yeah. The Sonic Youth one, when they play at the New Ardrey Ballroom in Hume. I can look back in my work diary and I can tell you what drinks I went to the supermarket to Sonic Youth.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's of any importance, but it's
just
kind
the
of
the prices of things are interesting. How little money people earn for things they do compared to now.
And also the a lot of the notes about Hacienda gigs or whatever is, should we charge £3.50 to see the Stone Roses or £4?
Wow.
Yeah.
£4, well, not enough people come because it's too expensive, you know.
Yeah. And now there'd be queues around the block.
Yeah, and now you'd be whatever.
But yeah, that stuff is fascinating. It really is.
Yeah, it definitely is. And yeah. Talking of what's next, have you got any projects on the way you can share with us?
Oh, that's good. An opportunity to plug the books again.
we've done the past. Yeah, let's talk about the future.
I don't know about events. Obviously, this morning I did write down a list of events that I might try and make happen next year because I like to do on-stage interviews with people.
Yes.
I think you've seen me interview Tim and in the past I've interviewed David Byrne, John Lydon, Naina Cherry.
Wow.
And that I love doing on stage interviews in front of an audience.
Yeah. Yes.
I'd like to do more of them next year. And yeah, and then the book project that I have on, I've done 5 in the series so far and I'm going to do a total of at least 8.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, just I think my philosophy when I wrote Sonic Youth Slept on My Floor, my acclaimed memoir,
yes.
I think I wrote something about, again, when I was back then, when I was in 1986 or whatever, starting out.
Yeah.
And as you say, longevity wasn't a thing or even really a career wasn't a thing.
Yes.
My motivation was just, I want to wake up in the morning and do something interesting all through the day. You know? And in some ways that sounds quite unambitious, but in other ways it's very ambitious.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I hope to keep waking up each day and find a way to do stuff that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. A fun question now. If you could teleport anywhere, where would you go and how long would you stay?
I'll tell you what I'd do. Yeah, so what I should do is I could go to Paris and dig out Jim Morrison before he gets in the bath.
That's a good idea.
Come for a little walk and we go and have a coffee in a outside bar somewhere in Paris. And I'll say, let's do a Twitter listening party with Tim.
Yes,
Burgess.
Perfect.
And excellent.
I would stay as long as it took to make it happen. So that would have the combined result of stopping Jim Morrison from dying plus getting a really good listening party. So that's my
I think you get an award for that. Heroic act.
Heroic act. I don't know. Sometimes I kind of wonder with people like Jim Morrison whether somehow, it sounds awful, but he might not have a legendary status now. You know, he might like Eric Clapton or Van Morrison and just become a bit of an embarrassment, really.
Yes, that's the risk you'd have to take, wouldn't
that's
it?
That's the risk I would have to
take. Yeah, if you want to start meddling with history.
We have a Spotify playlist for the podcast of our guests providing a track of their choice. Do you have a track for us, please, from all of the listening parties?
I guess the Joy Division live version of New Dawn Fades.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
The Still album.
Fantastic.
Okay.
That'd be good.
And that's what I was, the album I was talking about earlier where I'm somewhere in the audience. So when I hear that,
I can hear you cheering.
Teleported back in time.
Okay.
Yes.
To 1980. And it's, you know, it's a pretty good version. The great thing about that is it is actually quite ragged. You know, like a lot of live bands around that time and other time, when you go and see them play, I never want it to sound like the album. You know, when people come out of a concert, it sounded just like the album. Which for me, I could have stayed at home and listened to the album.
Yes.
I like when I go and see a live band, I like something a bit more raw and unpredictable.
Yes, definitely. That's what I would say.
And that track is that. So that's my choice for your Spotify playlist.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Big thank you to Dave Haslam for chatting with us this week.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me. It was fantastic. You've got the great work and hopefully I'll see you in Manchester at an event soon.
Oh, I hope so. Yes.
Hope so.
We'll be back as soon as we find an excuse.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. See you later.
Thanks all for listening. This is the Listening Party Revelations podcast. Please subscribe and follow our Twitter account at LPRpod. And on behalf of the LPR podcast, we'd like to wish all of our listeners a very happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Bye.